All right, folks. Today we, for episode 11 of Slinging It with QB Velocity, season 3, we are very happy to be joined by Vince Papale. Vince, thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. This is great. I guess we probably have some, we have Patriot fans up there, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Bunch of Patriot fans.
You're not going to hold it against you. That's why I didn't wear the Eagle green here, so don't hold that against you. No, it's great to be here, and I'm real excited to talk to you guys. This is going to be pretty cool. And listen, Mark Wahlberg is my guy, right? So he's one of you. So it's as good as it gets.
Yeah, for sure. And those of you who don't know, you know, Vince just mentioned Mark Wahlberg. And of course, Mark played Vince in a movie called Invincible a few years ago. And Vince played on the Eagles for a couple of years in the 70s. So just definitely look up his story. And of course, we'll talk about it throughout this podcast as well. So first question we want to talk about, Vince, is when did you fall in love with the game of football?
The moment I saw a football game. So we, honest to God, we were, when I was growing up in suburban Philadelphia, the movie has me places, the Philly guy, which is sort of true. I did play there. I got 4 years in and a pension and then we lived in Philly. As a matter of fact, I'm a suburban Philly right now in a little town called Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're moving into Philly. I'm actually going to settle down in Florida. But, the moment I saw a football game, I fell in love with it. And we grew up in a lower middle class neighborhood and a housing project, basically. And we were one of the first to have a TV. And our Sundays used to revolve around the Eagles games, believe it or not. We didn't have Thursday night games, Monday night games. The only game was 1 o'clock. And, you know, if you're on the East Coast, West Coast, the only couple teams out there were 49ers and Rams back then. We didn't have all the others. I don't know, 23 or 28 teams in the West Coast now. But as soon as I saw that game, I fell in love with it. And there was this one guy, and we talk about him in the movie. His name was Tommy McDonald. I was a little guy, believe it or not, when I was 14, 15 years old. I hadn't even hit five feet tall. Hadn't even hit 100 pounds. And so there was this little guy for the Philadelphia Eagles by the name of Tommy McDonald. And he became my hero, my idol. And to think that when I made the Eagles, that we were basically on the same team, you know, the fraternity of retired players. And it was so cool. So I just had that love right from the beginning. And it's something that I've carried with me. My family, you know, we love the game. We're very close to Coach Peterson, former Coach Peterson. And of course, as you know, my son Vinny's playing ball right now. He's in Indianapolis, ready to play Thursday night in the spring league. So it's all good. It's part of the house, man. It's the family. There's footballs all over the place.
Exactly. It's a family business.
Yeah. It's a family love, you know.
And family love. Yeah, exactly.
My daughter works for the 76ers, but football has always been the sport in the house. And aside from gymnastics, my wife was a gymnast, not a Giants fan, but that's another story if we want to get into it.
And for a lot of people don't realize that you actually ran track in college. So
yeah.
So what made you decide to try the WFL and then eventually try out for the Eagles?
Yeah, that's a great question. So here's what happened in high school. I was pretty tiny, and I never really got to any height until I was a senior in high school. And then I was about 5'7", 155, 160 pounds. And my junior high school coach, I played 1 year in junior high school when I weighed about 90 pounds. He became the head coach my senior year of the football team. And they told me that I was too small back then to play. And he got in touch with me. He says, how come you're not coming out for the team? He says, well, I'm a first year senior. Most schools don't take first year seniors. He says, I want you. So what he did is actually, he knew I could run. He knew I could catch a football. And when we got to what we called a training camp, the one-week camp, we'd go to the mountains and the Pocono Mountains in that camp. At the end of that camp, I was the fastest guy in the team. I caught everything thrown at me. And the coach actually changed the whole offense to make it a passing offense. And our quarterback, ironically, went on to play and set all the passing records at Westchester. And then when he did that, he got drafted by the Vikings. And I mean, that's how good this quarterback was. And me, I was just this kid running all over the place. But I did it as a senior. So nobody's making any offers to me. And I thought maybe I'd go to a college and I maybe get a tryout. I'd get a walk on like a free agent. And then my senior year, I got a girlfriend, you know, and I played basketball and I'm two letter men and I'm really cool, you know. And my football coach says, Vince, he says, I need you on the track team. You're the fastest guy in the school. He says, you can do whatever you want. He said, you run sprints, run hurdles. How's that? And I said, you know, I'd really like to pole vault. He said, I knew you were going to say that. He said, because I went to your dad first and my dad said he can do anything but pole vault. Because I used to pole vault across the creek in our project with a bamboo pole. I'd go from one side to the other side, right? We didn't have creeks back where I grew up. There were creeks, okay? So anyway, to make the long story short, my senior year in high school, I'm a foot and a half off the world's record coming out of high school. And it was on Father's Day. And all these schools that passed over me started offering me scholarships on the spot on Father's Day. And I turned them all down in this one because I said, if I wasn't good enough then, I'm not good enough now. And this guy from St. Joe's College came up, great guy, and he offered me a scholarship. And I said, Dad, happy Father's Day. So I ran track. And I eventually became a five sport. I did the pole vault, long jump, triple jump, high hurdles, and led the relay. I did five events every meet. So then when I graduate, I go back to my alma mater and I become the head track coach. And I'm a school teacher. And I become the head track coach, assistant football coach. And then I got into decathlon. But while this was all happening, I was playing in those rough touch leagues like you see in a movie, you know. And then one thing led to the other. When I couldn't get into my aspiration was to get into the Olympic trials for the decathlon. I didn't get there. There was some stuff going on. So I started playing semi-pro football. And then somebody saw me playing semi-pro football. I had a game at a couple of 300 yards in receptions and four touchdowns. And there was a new league starting called the World Football League back in 1974. So they invited me to a free agent tryout. And there were 800 guys there. And there were 80 wide receivers. And of the 80 wide receivers, I was the fastest guy in the field again. And they gave me a tryout. Then so that I got through that tryout. Next thing you know, I wound up making the team and was one of their top receivers. And then the league folded after a year and a half. So I was going to go back and get my teaching job, and I go on a leave of absence because there's nothing available for me. So I start substitute teaching, and I start bartending. And lo and behold, Dick Vermeil comes in and has a free agent tryout. And as they say, the rest is history, and that's where they picked up the movie. They didn't go back to the World League. They didn't go back to the pole vault. They didn't go back to the track days and all that stuff, and which was cool. It's all right. You know, it's drama. But and it wasn't untrue. It's just they, you know, like in Rookie, the movie Rookie, which was by the same guys, they went back into Jim Morris's his school teaching days and that kind of stuff. But that's okay, you know, it worked out, and here we are. You know, I'm talking to you, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So you just talked about a little bit how you've gone through a lot of adversity through playing in different leagues and you know, trying to figure yourself out. So what advice would you have for someone right now who's going through adversity, especially in today's world with COVID and everything like that?
Oh my God. You know, I just feel so bad because I talked to so many athletes about this and the way everything's been all screwed up. Like, look, you know, the college my son went to, University of Delaware, they just won their second playoff game. They were in the spring. I mean, at least they were flexible enough to, you know, to have a spring league. But a lot of the high schools were shut down and, you know, a lot of the sports were shut down. And I just feel so bad for those juniors and seniors. You know, fine if you can, if you feel that, just find some sort of a club league or whatever it is. But, you know, for those poor souls and young men and young women that lost those scholarship opportunities because of the COVID, my heart breaks for them because one of them could have been my son. Listen, I know Vinny had a couple of NFL tryouts set up last March, and once the COVID hit, boom, they were wiped out. He had two pro days wiped out. He had three NFL, one CFL. He did wind up signing with the CFL, but they stopped. They postponed the league last year, so he opted out, and now he's doing the spring league where he's an Indy right now. So anybody there, it's, you know, I my best advice is to just keep hanging in there, you know, grind it out. Eventually, this is going to be over. You know, eventually they're going to allow us to take our masks off and, you know, and put in a, whatever the sport might be, and go ahead and move forward and get everybody back to school. And that's what we really need to do. We've got to get everybody back into the classroom. So hopefully that will happen this fall and things will get back to normal. But for sure. the advice would be just hang in there, stay in shape. You've got it now, you basically have to go out and start promoting yourself and maybe start making some phone calls or join a club, whatever. But that's about the best advice I can give right now. But don't quit. That's the thing. Do not quit.
Definitely.
So taking a look at Invincible, what was it really like to have a movie made about you? Like, not many people have that kind of opportunity. So what was it really like to have a movie about you?
That's pretty sick when you think about it. I mean, come on, man. You know, have you ever had a YouTube or have you ever done an Instagram or whatever? You've done a video. You're doing a podcast, right?
Yeah.
And you're recording yourself. I mean, can you imagine? You're there. And then the first time I went to the first set when they were filming the football scenes, the pro football scenes, and it was at Franklin Field where I was a season ticket holder for the Philadelphia Eagles at the University of Penn. That's where they shot all the pro games, and they dressed it up to make it look like Veterans Stadium. And to walk in there and to see Mark Wahlberg and to see the guy, Greg Kinnear, that was playing Dick Vermeil, and then to see the set and all this Disney stuff, and there were 5,000 extras in the stands. It took my breath away. And now still, you know, it's still, I'm a dad, you know, I'm a school teacher. My mom and dad never got beyond the eighth grade. And I'm like the luckiest guy in the world. And now, you know, the movie is world renowned. And I think that they tell me that I've got a little bit of a world presence. I've been told that. I've been knighted by the Italian Parliament of Cavaliere, which is pretty cool. So, and tomorrow I'm doing a podcast, a Zoom cast to 250 English speaking kids in Paris,
nice.
In France, France, Spain, and Italy, you know, that are locked in. At least we're not mm-hmm. locked in. You know, I spend most of my time in Florida. I'm in suburban Philly right now, but you know, that's tough, boy. That's tough. So it's the craziest thing in the world. I'm still pinching myself. It's 15 years come Labor Day when the movie came out. We just started right about now, 17 years ago, I was training Mark Wahlberg in a high school football field that my wife actually went to that high school called Northeast High School. And we were working with him, getting him ready and prepping him for what he's going to have to deal with, because he says, I'm going to take all the hits. And he got the crap kicked out of him. He did. Because all the guys, the pro football guys, the ones in the pro football scenes, and they were all Arena Football League players. I mean, these guys, they're active football players, and, you know, they're thirsty, you know. And then Mark's coming on, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, my God, he had a target on his back. They just clocked him. He loved it. He just was like the lone survivor when he was a Navy SEAL. He just likes so much that action, which is, that's what made him, to me, he's the perfect guy to have played me. But so, it's cool. Yeah, I'm sorry. So,
did you have a favorite part of the movie, like during the movie at all? Or
Am I in the movie?
No, was there, did you have a favorite part of the movie? Sorry.
Oh, a favorite part of the movie? Yeah, there's one scene that gets me pretty good. It chokes me up. It's right after the Cowboys game. And it makes it look in the Cowboys game that I'm on the verge of perhaps getting cut. I don't really think that was the case, but that was Hollywood. So what I'm doing is I'm driving through the streets of Philadelphia. Mark is driving through the streets in a really tricked out car to see how they set that car up with all the lighting and crap. It was really wild. And he's driving through, it's called The Moment of Truth. And what it is, it's my reconnection to football as I loved it as a kid. And as I'm driving through the street, there's a bunch of kids playing football in the street. And it's a little girl with pigtails, who is my daughter, Gabriella, who was 10 years old at the time, throws the ball out on the street. And my son, Vinny, who's now an indie playing Thursday night on national TV. My son, Vinny, who's like 6 years old, runs out with his long blonde hair and he's got number 83 taped on his back. And Mark looks at it and that was like the reconnection. And then he goes and then Mark goes and I go to a to a rough touch game in the mud. And I just loved that, the way they filmed it and the music. It was just spectacular. The photography, the basically choreography was so cool, and how the directors spliced it up and cut it. It was wild. So they're my two favorites, you know, and now my kids are 27 and 24, but it was fun.
That's extremely interesting too, because I never realized that both of your kids were included in the movie.
Yeah, Janet's awesome. In the movie. I'm in it. You know, I get my 2 seconds of fame, and my wife Janet's in it right toward the end when we don't get the first down and we're going to have to punt. It turns out to be the climax of the movie. So pretty cool stuff.
Definitely.
So how much did you wind up helping with the making of the movie? Like, obviously, well, I took your story for it.
Yeah, I did a lot of it. You know, the script, obviously, with the script, Brad Gann, my kudos first, the executive producer, Ken Mock, who was a creator of America's Next Top Model with Tyra Banks. And he was the one that took the risk, and he spent the money to write a script. And Brad Gann wrote a beautiful script. And so I was certainly part of that, you know, with script writing in the first draft. And then I only did this. We didn't really have like access. We didn't have Google then, you know, you didn't have the access to the internet when this was all happening back in 2003. 2004 when we started the production of the movie. And so, you know, I had a big say in that. And then when the movie was going to go and get shot, they green-lighted it, which they call green light, which means now the budget's been accepted. It's a $60 million budget, which is pretty big for a sports movie. And it was Walt Disney. And then they had me do a lot of stuff for the wardrobe, basically. And then I would take the crews around to Philadelphia when it was determined to sit, the film was going to be shot in Philly, not New York. I would take the crew around to Philadelphia and show them certain spots where I used to hang out and do this and do that. So there's, you know, a couple of the places that I showed them were places that they used in the movie. Other than that, they basically stay the hell out of the way. You know, if we see you in a frame that we're not supposed to see you in now, that'll cost like $10,000 to shut that scene down. So they say, you stay behind the cameras, stay out of the way. And then every once in a while, when I see something going, whoa, wait a minute, it was up there. They would just say, would you just shut up? You know, we know how to make a movie. You know how to play football. You know, we know how to make a movie. So they were my inputs, you know. And they say, I always break my wife's chops about it, they say. And they say that the relationship that I have with everybody involved, with Walt Disney, executive producer, with the producers, Mark Wahlberg, all the other co-actors and actresses and Elizabeth Banks and all that, we've remained friends and we stay in touch. And they say that's rare, it never happens. And I bust Rudy all the time. You know, I said, hey, look, you know, I had Marky Mark from the Funky Bunch play me. You had Frollo, for crying out loud, playing you. Yes. Yeah, baby. I mean, Mark with his tiny whiteys. So it's as good as it gets. You know, Marcus, he just loves my children. My children love him, and he's the greatest. And God bless Mark. And he just lost his mom. And our thoughts and prayers are always with Mark Wahlberg. He was tremendous, tremendous to work with. And aside from what I was saying, I trained with him for 2 weeks prior to the shoot in the movie. I would run routes. I'm in my 50s then. I'm running routes, and he's covering me. I'm covering him. It was fun. We had a good time.
How well did he run routes?
He did a beautiful job. Mark's a great athlete, very gifted athlete. If you ever saw the basketball diaries and you've seen him in action, I mean, the guy can move. Mm. And he's got great eye-hand coordination, hand-eye coordination. And I put him through all the drills that we would have. Like, you know, I know you're a quarterback in college, right? So, you know, the quick hand, the drills always making sure the ball's going in and like mm-hmm. that. And then we would have one drill called the quick hands where he'd have his back to me. And then I'd throw the ball and I'd say ball. And then he'd spin around, try to find the ball and catch it. And we did all those kinds of drills, sideline drills and how to run the routes. And then we had this guy, Jim Jensen, who played for the Dolphins, also came in and he worked as a consultant, as they say, because I was sort of not supposed to be doing all that, but I did anyway, couldn't help myself. I'm the coach like you. And, you know, that's what I did when I got out. I coached And so I had a big part in helping trying to develop Mark, which was really cool.
Awesome.
So you mentioned earlier that a couple parts of the movie kind of got Hollywooded up for dramatic effect. So how realistic was the final product compared to how things really went down?
Well, the biggest thing was actually the portrayal of me as a part-time bartender substitute teacher. In reality, I was a full-time school teacher for 6 years, working my master's degree in counseling, head football coach, head track coach, assistant football coach, aspiring to be an Olympic decathlete. And I actually did qualifying score for the Olympic trials, but it wasn't sanctioned. And I couldn't get into a sanctioned meet. And that's when I got pissed off and started playing semi-pro football. So they, you know, but that's okay because they just didn't go back, you know, and I don't have a problem with that. The other thing is they wanted a little bit of drama and humor. So they decided to take my love interest, who's played by Elizabeth Banks, and it's my wife now of 27 years and the mother of our children, Janet, and they decided that they're going to make her a Giants fan. And the reason that happened, the way it happened in the original script, they had her coming back from South Africa as a gymnast, as a gymnastics coach and a world-class gymnast, where she was coaching the South African Olympians in Cape Town, South Africa. And she was coaching their Olympic team, and she's like 22 years old. And when we met, and then an original script had her and me meeting that way, and then we wanted to get the NFL's endorsement. And the only way the NFL would endorse us is if we could have her as a Giants fan and a bartender. So I said to her, I said, you don't have to do this. You don't have to sign off if you don't want to do this. She said, what, are you crazy? You're out of your mind. She said, it'll be fun. And so she signed off and they made Janet a Giants fan. But in reality, she was on the USA team back in the Munich days. And Kathy Rigby was her teammate and best friend. And she didn't compete in the Munich because of a sprained ankle that she got into trials. She was on her way and then she got knocked out with an injury. But she did compete in the World Games. And eventually, she wound up blowing a knee out in gymnastics and becoming a diver. And she set all Penn State's diving records and qualified for the Olympic trials in diving. So she had a choice back then to do one of two things, to stay in gymnastics or go into diving. And she decided to take a coaching job at the University of Pennsylvania, where she became the head gymnastics coach and created that program and stayed there for 15 years. Now, here's the great irony with that one. I used to hang out there all the time and work out and train. I never met her. That's number one. I mean, after the first time I met her, I didn't realize that she was even back at Penn. Number two, we filmed all the pro football scenes at the University of Penn. And number three, Elizabeth Banks, who plays her in the movie, went to the University of Pennsylvania.
Wow. How
about that?
Yeah, I mean, how cool is that? That's the perfect trifecta. So, you know, I hope that answered your question. Everything else, I mean, you know, there are a couple little things, you know, some time warps and things like that. But boy, you know, they captured the journey. And, you know, and hopefully metaphorically, everybody can take a look at it and say, you know what, I see me there. That's me. That, you know, that scene there, that's me. I've been through that. You know, the heartache, the heartbreak, you know, being told that you weren't good enough, the bullying, all the stuff that you go through. That's exactly the way it happened. Pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And you just mentioned how the movie captured a lot of those moments. And
yeah,
one of the best moments obviously was when he ended up making the Eagles. So what for you in real life, what was your feelings when you made the Eagles?
Oh my God, I was out of my mind. Kidding me? You know, keep in mind, this was a 14 game season. Now you NFL fans out there, right? They're going with three preseason games now and 17 regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Back then at 76, I'll get rid of this ball. Back then in 76, we had six preseason games, six and 14 regular season games. So I led the team in receptions. Now I led the team in receptions, never played college football. And I'm leading the team in receptions in the preseason and in touchdown receptions as well. And if I didn't make the team, I'd have been really pissed off, you know, but I you just don't know, you know, you just don't know. And then, you know, Coach Ramil comes up and gives me the, hey, welcome to the team. You're a Philadelphia Eagle. That was so cool. So here's what I did. I said, oh my God, I was going crazy, guys. So I was going nuts. I said, oh my God, can I make a phone call? They said, what do you mean, make a phone call? I said, can I call my dad? And then first they were breaking me. What, you're going to have a press conference? So I said, no, I got to call my dad. So I got a hold. I make a collect call to Westinghouse where he worked. I got a hold of the shop steward, and he knew that it was the last day. It was the last cut. And I said, just tell King he has little boys of Philadelphia Eagle. And they use that scene in the, they use that term in the movie, you know, your little boys of Philadelphia Eagle, Kingy. And you could just hear everybody in the background screaming and yelling. They wanted to put that scene in, but they couldn't do it because it was called a Rudy moment. Because if you remember in the movie Rudy, when he got accepted to Notre Dame, that was the same reaction. His father had the same background as me, which was cool. I bust Rudy all the time. We're on the road a lot. We do. I've been with him 4 or 5 times now because of the COVID. We do these private autograph sessions. So it's me and Rudy in the same room just going after it. You know, I just love it.
Awesome.
Little, yeah, you're one tackle for crying out loud. Rudy. As you're offside, you know you weren't, dude. He's great. I love Rudy. That's a great story, too. When I cried my eyes out at the end of Rudy and Miracle. Miracle is my favorite sports movie other than Rocky and Invincible, I have to say. And Rudy's right up there in the top five. Secretary is right there. Rookie. You know, and a lot of them were Disney movies. So cool.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And for you, during your playing career, what was your mentality kind of as that underdog heading into practices and in games as well?
That's a great question, Mike. I've rarely been asked that question, and I think so much of it is the mental aspect of it.
Right.
I treat it every day in practice as if it were the last practice I would ever have as a Philadelphia Eagle. There was no in me. I was a marginal player, man. That's a 45-man roster, and I'm the 45th guy on that 45-man roster. I mean, if there's the first guy that's going to go, it's going to be old number 83, right? And right here. So this guy's gone. And so I treated every practice as if it was my last practice ever. And that certainly, you know, with the limited amount of games and the privilege and honor, not a right. It's not a right. It's not a passing. It's a privilege to play in the NFL. And I took nothing for granted. I know I played games that I should never have played because of injuries. I would just, whatever you had to do to get it done, I did it. And I never missed a game because of an injury until finally my shoulders, they gave out. I separated this one and dislocated that one in the same game. So it is what it is, you know. I went out flying. You know, it's funny because Ron Jaworski on the bus down, we're playing Baltimore, and he was our quarterback, Jaws. You know, you see him all the time, NFL Network, ESPN and all. Jaws is the best. I was actually with him the other night doing the dress show. And he came up to me. I'm always reading a book. I was always reading spy novels and crap like that. Nothing to get my brain smarter. And he says, hey, man, you ready? He says, you're going to get a lot of plays tonight. I said, man, I'm going to play tonight like it's the last game I've ever played in my life. And guess what? I had 4 catches in the first half. Ramil said, you're out, Papali. I've seen enough. And I said, coach, one more play, please, one more play. And guess what? That was the one that tore my shoulder apart. And that was,
oh no.
Yeah. And I was playing, I re-separated my right shoulder from surgery the year before, and I didn't tell anybody. I should never have been on the field, but I was too stupid, you know, because I was battling this kid, Scott Fiske, who was a 5th-round draft pick coming out of Penn State. So, you know, it is what it is. You go out in flames. That's mm-hmm. where I did it, you know, like a kamikaze. I'm going. If I'm going, I'm going in flames.
So, yeah, you left it all out there.
Hey, I got a movie. I mean, you know, you missed the Super Bowl by a year. I said, tell me 10 guys that are on that Super Bowl team, right? And I said, but tell me how many of them have movies made about them. You know, I just, that's the other way. And I'm not an asshole like that. You know, I mean, really, it's not my style, but it, you know, when they say, oh, you didn't make the Super Bowl, it's okay. I did okay. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right. Yeah, Mark Wahlberg, man, he's my buddy. life is so good, man. You guys, look at you. You're so young. You're out of college. You're coaching. You're doing this. You know, you're living the dream. The COVID sort of messed things up a little bit, but it's going to be okay. You're healthy. Right. Just have fun, guys. Live the dream, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. If you believe it in your heart, you can do it. You can do it. And then just make an impact. You know, life is so, and treat everybody with respect, regardless of whatever. And you know what the whatevers are.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So what was it like playing for Coach Vermeil? That's a pretty big name head coach.
Yeah, I was, you know, now I can really have fun with it. Matter of fact, it was me, Jaws, and Ramil the other night at this draft show. And Jaws picked, he said, they're going to get a receiver. He's, I guarantee you. So everybody's saying cornerback. He said, they're going to get a receiver. And they got Devontae Smith from Alabama, which I'm real excited about. Mm-hmm. But what's it like to play for him? It was great. And I'll tell you why. Because he was a teacher, and he was a coach. And he's got Italian, a little Italian blood in him like I do. And, he's got his mother's side, and he was a teacher and a coach like me. And his philosophy as a coach was my philosophy as a player. I'm going to work harder than anybody on that. I'm going to work my ass off. There's nobody on that field that's going to work harder than me. And that was his philosophy as a coach, that he says, well, I got a ladder to climb. You know, I've got George Allen here. I've got Vince Lombardi. As I'm like on the bottom rung, and I'm going to outwork everybody. And he eventually got to the Super Bowl. So our thought processes, and there was just a lot of respect that I didn't realize that he had for me. Knowing my background and coming from a mentally ill mother and parents my parents not getting beyond the eighth grade. Once he got to know me, and there was that closeness and that bond, I'm telling you, he had to cut me one time. He couldn't even talk. He was crying like a baby, as I was, because it was, you know, it was almost like a divorce. You know, I was having this tremendous marriage with the NFL and with the city of Philadelphia. But hey, man, the guy gave me the opportunity of a lifetime, and he worked our tails off. And he always talks about, you know, how the country club atmosphere is and training camp. Now you see why fundamentals are so poor sometimes, tackling and that kind of stuff, because we're just not doing it. Training camps are not allowed. And the OTAs, nobody's going to OTAs now. Everything is cyber, everything is virtual. So he worked us hard. But hey, listen, he allowed me to be captain of the team. He gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. He gave me a chance to just realize my craziest dream. I don't talk to you guys if it's not for Dick Vermeil. You know, I don't meet Ron Jaworski. I don't have this house in Florida. I don't have this Disney movie. I don't have all the beautiful things that I have in my life. And I'm not saying beautiful things from a materialistic perspective, beautiful things in friendships, mm-hmm. experiences, respect, you know, those kinds of things. It's just the best. So definitely. I love him to death. And every time I talk to him, the last three words is, I love you, coach. Always, I love you, coach. It's owe everything to him.
That's awesome. And now you've mentioned your son, Vinny. Of course, he's been in the XFL. And like you said, he mentioned he signed with the CFL last year. And now he's playing in the Spring League. And everyone tune in the Spring League this Thursday. All right. But for you, what's... Yeah.
Fox, Thursday, Fox, 10 o'clock. He's a Conqueror, number 15, slot receiver. The classic Jerry Manville from the Houston Oilers. And, you know, the guy yep. always has a seat for Disney. I mean, for Presley, Elvis, that's his coach. So
right.
I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off.
No worries. But what's it been like for you to be able to watch Vinny's career? And what advice would you have for parents who have athletes that are coming up through their careers?
That's a fantastic question. I'll tell you why. I'm going to backtrack a little bit, because I'm going to go to my daughter, Gabriella, first. And you know, because my wife, Janet, being a world-class gymnast, you know, and she's coaching at Penn, and everybody, you go to gymnastics meets, hey, Cantwell. I mean, they all know her. And Gabby's first shot at athletics was gymnastics. Of course, she played soccer and, you know, did the softball like everybody else, but she took a run at gymnastics. And and she just didn't like it. She just didn't like it. She got injured a couple of times. And to my wife's credit, instead of just forcing her to do something she didn't like to do, she allowed her to go and do something else. And she started playing other sports. And believe it or not, she was a great dancer. And she wanted to dance and she wanted to cheer. And she wound up cheering and becoming captain of her cheer team in high school. And they won all kinds of titles for competitions. And that was her athletic side. But she used gymnastics as the base. But God bless my wife, Janet, for not pressuring her to do something she didn't want to do. So now here I am, you know, I've got Vinny, and man, he got the gene pool. He got the genes. And from the time he was a kid, and same thing, Gabby, good athlete, great athlete. But from the time he could do things, I would just look and I say, you know, so I started coaching him from the time he was 6 years old. I tell his dad, I want to play football. I said, you can't. I said, why is that? I said, because you're sucking your thumb. If football players don't suck their thumb, And the next day he stopped sucking his thumb. So, and I knew that so he stopped sucking his thumb, and I knew that he had some talent. I wanted to make sure that nobody took it, because I was an observer of some of the coaches in the neighborhood, and I wasn't a real fan of how they were coaching. So I said, okay, I'm going to get involved and I'm going to become the head coach. And I became the head coach, and I coached him all the way through high school. And, you know, there's that fine line, because, you know, like Doug Peterson, he's got a son that just got picked up by the 49ers. How do you survive as the son of a former player, as the son of a coach, as the son of a guy who just made the movie about, you know, well, the only reason that you got there is because you're entitled, because your old man's invincible, this and that. He never, ever was entitled to anything in what he did athletically and anything he's ever done in life. He's got grit in his heart and he worked hard. So there was always that fine line, and I'm really, really proud of him with how he's handled it. And that's like I said, you know, I just like to say, hey, you know, I'm just his dad. So am I showing video wise? There we go. So, you know, I'm just Vinny's dad, and I'm there now to support him. And, you know, I'll be watching him Thursday, and I'll be out in Indy for the South. I'm going to be out there for games 2, 4, and 6. And my buddy runs the Indy 500, and he just invited me to that. So that's going to be cool. It's going to be a great experience. But, you know, we'll see. You know, life's about opportunities and being prepared to take advantage of them, as you guys will find out as you go through your young lives. I'll give you, because I know we're going to have to wrap this, but I'll give you a great quote that was given to me by my high school coach, you know, the guy that dragged me out to play in the football, dragged me out to track. When everybody was busting my chops about being an NFL guy and a tryout, you're too old, never been done before, da, da, da. This great quote is, happy are those who dream dreams and are willing to pay the price to make their dreams come true. And when I talk to the military, the ultimate price that is paid to keep our dreams alive, law enforcement, whatever it might be, anybody. But, you know, with anybody like you or my son or anyone else, you know, if you're not willing to pay the price and go the extra yard and hustle, have passion, energy, and those kinds of things, forget about it. You're just posing. And that quote's always lived with me. And I stopped using it until the guy that won the NCAA championship, Jay Wright from Villanova, who was my intern when he got out of college. And Jay Wright, hey, Vince, you still using that quote? And I said, oh. And there we go, you know. So, I'm blessed. I got two beautiful children. It's going to be Mother's Day this weekend. I've got the greatest wife in the world. I have an opportunity to talk to you. Young guys, I see your passion. I see that in you right here, man. The world's out there waiting for you. Just take it, embrace it. And, you know, as life's an audible, man, just roll with it. And, you know, go bobbing and weaving. You'll be fine. You know, just stay safe. That's the key thing.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for taking some time on this.
Night. Great. I've really enjoyed this. This has been really cool. Thanks for having me, guys. It's pretty cool. And for you Patriot fans up there, I'm sorry about a couple of years ago. I mean, you thought you had it, didn't you?
At least it was a fun game.
I enjoyed watching. I mean, there was about 1,000 yards in offense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, like I know Coach Peterson really well. Actually, we never ran each other down in Jupiter now. So, and we finally talked about, because I never talked football with the guy. Now that he's not coaching, it's pretty cool. And I said, tell me about this game. You know, tell me about the Philly special. And I got to hear some of the insides, and it's really cool. You know, what a great experience. And you know, for a guy like him, and for us to finally get one. You've had enough. You've had 6 or 7 or 10. You know. But I'll tell you what, if my son were to play anywhere, if it weren't for the Philadelphia Eagles, it'd certainly be up there with New England with Bill Belichick. He's without a doubt the best, one of the best in the NFL. So, hey, God bless you guys. Thank you very much. You're invincible. Stay safe, win the day, and just chase your dream, man. It's all there for you.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.